This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. More than 2 weeks after Hurricane Florence, thousands of students are still out of school in North Carolina. Officials estimate the storm caused three times as much damage to the state's schools as Hurricane Matthew in 2016. The North Carolina General Assembly passed a bill in yesterday's special session to give schools flexibility in how they make up days missed because of the hurricane. Lawmakers also appropriated funds to pay school employees as though they worked through the storm. Liz Schlemmer is WUNC's education policy reporter, and she joins us now from the state legislature. Welcome, Liz.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Sure. You were at the State Board of Education meeting this morning. What came out of that?
You know, we heard from a number of state education officials, including the chief of insurance for DPI. And right now, she said insurance officials are setting aside about $40 million for schools and community colleges who saw damage. And like you were saying, in comparison to Matthew is about three times as much. It was about $14 million in claims for Hurricane Matthew. And they're looking at around 40 for Florence. But that number could still rise. And we're seeing that, you know, Florence just had winds as well as flooding, and the flooding was so widespread. And a lot of schools were without power for a long time. So as they're coming back, they're also finding mold and mildew. We heard from the Department of Transportation that some of the school bus garages also flooded. And overall, schools are just scrambling to try to get cleaned up and ready for students down in that southeast part of the state.
Well, that really puts it in perspective. Three times the amount for Matthew. And of course, that storm was tremendous. One of the topics, I guess, under consideration at the meeting is something called FAST-NC. What's this?
So FAST-NC stands for Florence Aid for Students and Teachers, and it is a bipartisan effort to try to raise money that could directly help students and educators. And there's a committee that includes current and former state education leaders, people like former State Superintendent Mike Ward and June Atkinson, the current State Superintendent Mark Johnson, and others. And on this committee, they're going to basically respond to grant requests directly from teachers that will be approved by their own districts. And they say they don't want to limit what educators can ask for. So they're really opening this up for anything from school supplies to helping teachers who were displaced and are homeless and might need financial help to get temporary housing. They said they're willing to cover anything that was not covered by insurance. And they're asking for donations from the public. So you can go to ncpublicschools.org and make a donation there. They're just really urging people to help out with all of the smaller needs that teachers and students have.
Hey, Liz, how many schools are still closed?
A number of whole school districts are still closed. You know, Brunswick County, Pender and Robeson County. And some schools are opening up tomorrow. I know in New Hanover County schools, they're getting ready for students beginning tomorrow.
You mentioned New Hanover County. You were there and spent some time last week. What were the conditions like?
Yeah, I drove down to Wilmington on Thursday and Friday of last week. Couldn't get a hotel in the town, but I went both days to Trask Middle School, which was one of the most badly damaged schools in the county initially. It saw some direct flooding. So it was a shelter school. They had a couple hundred shelter residents in that school when in the ceiling of the shop building, they had some drain pipes that were draining for the entire roof, and the pipes just fell out from the massive flow of water that they were draining. And that started to fill up the shop building, started to move into the hallways where there were shelter residents. And they, you know, they had to deal with that. And eventually the water stopped and they were able to clean up pretty quickly. They pulled in dehumidifiers very quickly. And luckily for that school, they had generator power the entire time. So they actually moved from being one of the most damaged schools to being one of the lesser damaged schools in the district.
But it also speaks to the many ways in which these schools were damaged. And in many cases, some of the damage was concealed initially. It was even hard to tell initially that there would be much damage. But as the days went on, it was pretty clear that there was some substantial damage to these schools, right?
Yeah, that's what I was hearing from this principal at Trask Middle School. She said, you know, they were actually in pretty good shape at this point, but they were hearing from other schools where the principals had gone in, checked at the school initially, flipped on the light switches, walked in, looked around, didn't see any major damage, turned the lights off, left, came back a week later, and after that school had been without power, without air conditioning, that there was substantial mold and mildew, and also damage in the walls to the drywall where, when insurance adjusters came and they used their tools, they could measure that those walls had been saturated. So there was, you know, further damage than you could even see initially.
You talked about insurance adjusters. Talk about the way in which this is going to be paid for and who's responsible for the cost of this damage.
So many schools get their insurance through the Department of Public Instruction. And right now, DPI is sending out insurance adjusters and contracted insurance adjusters to measure that damage. And DPI's portfolio of schools is really high risk. It's pretty high, heavy in the southeast region of the state because schools aren't required to get their insurance through DPI. So if they can get it somewhere else and they can get it cheaper, they do. And right now, Eileen Townsend, who is the chief officer for that insurance fund, said that they've received about 125 claims from schools and community colleges and that that number is already rising.
This situation is fluid. And it continues to change because we're hearing from schools, they're finding damage. You know, we're learning every day more about the devastation of this hurricane.
That was Eileen Townsend, the chief of insurance for the DPI. I'm talking with W Education education policy reporter Liz Schlemmer. So, I mean, it's interesting to think about the details of this. There are insurance policies. DPI actually is an insurer. Counties, school systems would have to buy insurance. And now it's kind of working out these claims. Also, questions about legislation yesterday. The legislature did appropriate more funding, and it also gave schools some flexibility in terms of how to make up this time. Schools, as you say, are still out. There are rules about how many days kids have to be in school. So talk about where we are in terms of the latest legislation.
The General Assembly met yesterday in a quick session and passed a bill that does two major things. First, they said the first order of business was just to make sure that all school employees were paid. In most districts, teachers were paid, but sometimes non-certified staff, people like cafeteria workers and bus drivers, some of them were missing checks. And so they appropriated some money specifically to help pay for the loss of federal funding, especially for cafeteria workers. Some of their salaries come from receipts from the federal government for participating in the lunch program. And so the state put forward $6.5 million to help pay cafeteria workers and others and just make sure that they were paid as if their schools were not closed. Because some of these employees are, you know, also facing major personal losses. So it's important to them that they keep those paychecks coming. Then the second major thing that they wanted to address was makeup days for schools. So schools are required to be in class 185 days a year. And as we know, some of these districts have been out for 3 weeks. So they came up with a plan that really gives wide flexibility to school districts and charter schools about how they're going to make up those days. If a district was not in a declared disaster area, then they only have to make up 2 days, and then they get to decide what they want to do about any further days. And those in the designated disaster areas get full discretion on how they're going to make up those days.
Not an easy choice to make. I mean, you think it's obvious, you know, we can't possibly make up all of those days, so we'll have to give them some flexibility. But the other concern, of course, is that these are some districts that already have some challenges in terms of academic standards and low-wealth neighborhoods and low-wealth communities where missing a couple of extra days can be significant, right?
Yeah, and the lawmakers had basically a unanimous effort to pass this through. But there were some questions from certain lawmakers who were saying, well, are we sure that students are going to have enough instruction? Or how do we know if we're not keeping that requirement that we usually have? And the bill sponsors were saying, you know, it was really most important that we gave schools answers about what they could do, what they're allowed to do, and give them flexibility in that. But of course, yeah, there's concern that some students who may have already been struggling, who were also some of the most vulnerable to the storm, you know, kids who don't always know where their food is coming from, or kids who are facing more poverty, are really feeling the effects of the storm, and there's concern about the long-term impact on students' education as they miss days of school and as they recover from trauma.
On them in particular, but then there are these ancillary effects. Sometimes principals' pay is dependent on test performance, and if, again, this has an impact on test, what are we going to do about these principals?
Yeah, that is a great point. And, you know, I talked to that principal in Wilmington about this too, and she said, you know, that's kind of, at this point, thinking about instruction and thinking about end of grade exams is kind of the last thing on everyone's mind. But if schools really struggle with making up all that lost instruction time, students' test scores could suffer. And right now, the fairly new principal pay schedule, which is going to take full effect this year, bases principal salaries on the end of grade exams of students in their school. And so some of those schools that are very badly impacted by the storm, you know, we could also see effects for pay. And that was brought up during the legislative session, but the bill sponsor said that's kind of an issue for another day. We're just trying to give people certainty about what schools can do right now, and then we'll come back and take another whack at this later and deal with some of those other issues.
All right, Liz, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Liz Schlimmer is WUNC's education policy reporter. You can find links to her reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, he left his home in Bosnia, became a respected professor at UNC Charlotte, but returned to his native land to run for president. That conversation on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.